Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. Mark is on vacation. Got into trouble once mocking him being sick, but he's not sick today. He's on vacation, but he'll be back tomorrow. I think he was a man in Vegas, so I'm sure he'll
have... Yeah, he's at a music festival out there.
Music festival. So he'll have lots of stories when he gets back.
He will. He's already sent me some very interesting pictures from the attire that's being worn out there.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if he's going to share that or not, but wow. It's
eye-opening?
It's interesting, yes.
Eye-opening.
Fred, I'll have to show you.
I don't understand.
Yeah, yes, you do. It's in Vegas, Fred. What do you think they wear in Vegas?
Some of the outfits that people wear to these music festivals are very...
Scantily
very
clad.
Revealing, let's just say. Yes.
Yeah, so his stories won't be as revealing as the photographs.
Right, exactly.
But there's a poll that came out just Friday that 2 in 3 parents think their kids are smarter than they were when they were growing up. Brad, do you think there's any truth to that?
Without a doubt.
And why is that? You've got kids.
I know exactly what he's going to say.
And it's not just that they're so much better with technology.
Okay.
But no, I think they're much smarter. They know stuff that I didn't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I'm just impressed. I don't think I could make it through college these days.
Yeah.
It just seems so hard.
I think kids these days are just, like it or not, exposed to a lot more, that they see on YouTube or somewhere on the internet, and they just even my kids at 5 will say things that I never thought would come out of their mouth, good and bad, they're just so wise and so smart beyond their years.
Yeah, I have 3 daughters, and 2 of them are addicted to podcasts, so
I can
they're
see
all
that.
So they're always talking to me. Well, Dad, I heard this, and they go through this stuff that they hear on podcasts. And I thought, because I'm an information vacuum cleaner, and I thought, I so wish I could have done that when I was their age, but I didn't have that option. Now,
right.
I'm going to admit my geekness here, guys. I actually read the encyclopedia, the World Book Encyclopedia, from cover to cover.
Really?
When I was a kid. Because that's just how nerdy. Fred's looking at me like, oh my gosh.
Wait,
really
a minute. Wait a minute. I'm still digesting this. You read what again?
The World Book Encyclopedia. I started with A and I ended with Z, and it took me
Really?
Yeah. It took me a couple of years, but and I know
which
so
years.
Nerdy.
Which years of your life? That's key to know.
Well, I was probably in junior high, late grade school, early junior high.
Now, did you read it or did you actually retain it? There's a difference.
I retained most.
Okay.
Of it. Yeah.
All
I
right.
did. But see, there was no internet then. So, I mean, there technically was. The internet, DARPA invented the internet in 1966. But, I mean, there really wasn't the internet.
Don't tell that to Al Gore.
That's right. He said he invented it, right? But yeah, I know that's pretty nerdy. But my point is that kids today, it's not just that they're good with technology, but they have access to information that we did not have. And I'm looking at Dave here, the youngest guy in the room, that even you didn't have necessarily.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
When you were a kid.
Yeah.
And with that additional information, as long as it's retained and learned, yeah, they could actually be a whole lot smarter than we are because they have better access to information.
Yeah, and with my sons, whenever you get in the car, you expect them to be listening to music. They've got podcasts on.
Yeah.
And they're just soaking up information.
Yeah.
They're soaking up information. And I'll tell you, though, the information that I want to soak up is Dave's news.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, I think to start off, we might need some different music here. Well, you know, we're actually just a couple weeks away from seeing Daniel Craig as James Bond for the final time. This is a movie I think that was delayed a few times, right? Because of COVID? Yeah, crazy. No Time to Die is set to release for October 8th, and that will be Craig's end of his tenure playing the famed secret agent. Video just surfaced of Craig talking to the cast about how much he enjoyed portraying the character. I think he's one of my favorites, but then again, I'm a young guy. Shooting wrapped up back in October 2019, which is when the speech was given, but it gives us all the feels seeing Craig hold back tears, thanking the cast and crew for working with him. And let's hear what Mr. Daniel Craig had to say.
And a lot of people here worked on 5 pictures with me, and I know there's a lot of things said about what I think about these films and all of those, whatever, but I've loved every single second of these movies, and especially this one, because I've got up every morning and I've had the chance to work with you guys, and that has been one of the greatest honors of my life. So
I mean, me growing up, I didn't really care for Pierce Brosnan as a 007.
No.
Didn't do anything for me.
No.
I go back to the old days, and then Daniel Craig, who I think is just fantastic in the role, but who's your favorite one?
Shaken, not stirred. Sean Connery. Sean Connery.
All right.
That's all I that's the best impression I do, which is really awful.
Mine is Roger Moore.
You like Roger Moore?
I like Roger Moore.
Did you like him because he was funny? Or what was it that you liked?
Just classy. I don't know. It just seemed classy.
Is there one that we're missing?
Yeah.
Well, George Lazenby. Did. Now, this is a great story. He did one movie in between when Sean Connery said, I don't want to do anymore. And then George Lazenby came and did On His Majesty's Secret Service.
1969.
Exactly. And the best scene in that movie, I mean, if you want to watch this movie, you can see it just for this scene only, okay? Because at the very beginning of the movie, there's a chase on the beach. He's got his girlfriend with him, and the bad guys come. There's your classic shootout. The bad guys kidnap his girlfriend, and they go away. And he picks up the girlfriend's shoes, and he looks to the camera, breaking the wall. He looks to the camera and says, this never happened to the other guy. The movie's
I think that's pretty rare for the time.
Oh yeah, nobody broke the wall then. Nobody broke the wall. It was fantastic. But his agent told him, George Lazenby's agent told him, this Bond thing isn't going to work. So you could make a lot more money as a model and as an actor in other areas. And so you should not sign up for multi-movies. And then, of course, we never heard from him again after that.
Right.
Great advice, pal.
Timothy Dalton. I think that was another one.
Okay.
87 and 89 was in The Living Daylights and License to Kill.
That's right. Yeah.
And I'm a Bond aficionado. I've seen all of them. I own all the movies. But the problem, I think, with Timothy Dalton wasn't so much him, but the writing was terrible. And it was almost made him cartoonish, even though I think he portrayed Bond well. It didn't come across. The movies really just weren't good.
Yeah. Let's move on here. There's a famous house in Boston's North End neighborhood called the Skinny House, which sold for a whopping $1.25 million on Thursday. The four-story home was built in 1862 and is less than 1,200 square feet, and it's called the Skinny House because it's only about 10 feet wide at its widest point. Yeah.
Wow.
Sold for $1.25 million. The house does not have a front door. You instead have to enter the house through a side door. It's also known to some as the Spite House, and it's called that because, according to local lore, two brothers inherited some land. When one of them joined the army, the other built a large house that took up most of the land. When the soldier brother returned home, he built the Skinny House to block his brother's view and sunlight.
Well, let's break
amazing.
This, let's break this down a second here. So the house is 10 feet wide?
At its widest point, yes.
And so a bed
four
is
stories,
out, right,
1,200
but a bed is out
feet.
Of the question, though.
I would think so.
So you're going to pay $1.2 million for a house, and you can't put a bed in it.
Right.
And showering, I would think, would
be difficult.
Sideways? This is problematic. I thought you were going to say it was a skinny house because if you're paying $1.2 million, you can't afford to buy groceries.
Yeah. Well.
And that's why you would be skinny.
So the house last sold in 2017 for $900,000. The bargain price. $900,000.
Oh, yeah. See, we'll get two of them at that point.
Sure. Well, of course. Why not? To Columbus, Ohio we go, where we find Keith Dalton and his crew of high school referees officiating game on Friday night between Grove City High School and Central Crossing High School. At some point during the game, and the article didn't say, the refs made a controversial call that eventually resulted in an unsportsmanlike penalty against Grove City. The game ends, and Dalton and the refs were inside their locker room being evaluated on their performance, and then they notice a problem. The door to their locker room was barricaded from the outside with a vending machine. So somebody from the high school, they don't know if it was a student, a parent, or whoever, blocked their door with the vending machine.
Wow.
The three refs eventually got out, but it took a lot of effort on their part. They got an apology, but they also want more to be done. They've now filed charges against Grove City. I think it's just another example of parents or whoever just taking sports way too seriously, where they don't like a call that's being made, so you decide to barricade the refs inside of a locker room?
You know, you'd think maybe the Padres or the Cardinals would have thought about that after, was that Friday's game?
Oh,
where
sure.
Where the umpiring was so bad.
Oh, right.
Fernando Tatis got
and Manny Machado got into it in the dugout.
Yeah.
Phil Cuzzy, just, gah, he's awful. Just awful. Let's go to the NFL. At the end of the first half of yesterday's Cowboys-Chargers game, the Cowboys were leading the Chargers 14-11 at halftime. Not really a big deal until you consider it's the first time in the NFL's 102-year history that the score of a game has ever been 14-11 at the half.
And who spent the time to verify that?
There actually is a... I know this...
Really?
There's a Twitter account out there dedicated to, you know, hey, the score of this game is, you know, that's 10-7, and it's been this way 600 times in the past. So there's actually accounts out there that will actually tell you, you know, how often the score has been
what. So basically sports numerology.
Yes, exactly. I think it's fascinating.
So I guess to get in 11 points, you would have had to have a safety in there, I would
think.
Either
three field goals and a safety.
Yeah.
Or let's break this down here. Touchdown without the extra point.
A field goal
and a safety.
And a safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's kind of the only way, isn't it?
Well, I guess so. Or, yeah. Or like five safeties.
Five safeties?
Well, there's no one.
You can't. No, that's right.
Four safeties. See, I don't think you could do it.
No.
That's the only way.
Four safeties and a field goal.
And the last story I have, the first trailer for American Underdog, the Kurt Warner story, which is starring Zachary Levi and Anna Paquin, debuts tonight during Jimmy Kimmel Live. The movie comes out on Christmas Day, so the official trailer is released tonight during Jimmy Kimmel's show.
So, you going to watch it?
Underdog?
Underdog.
American Underdog.
American Underdog.
American Underdog.
Yeah. I hate to say it looks a little cheesy, but it looks a little cheesy.
So what's the premise?
It's just Kurt Warner's story.
It's his rags to riches. It's from going whatever the store was, Winn-Dixie, but it was...
Yeah, that really fascinates me.
I mean, I'm going to watch it, but just seeing some of the clips that are out there and how they replicate the football inside of what's supposed to be the dome at the time, I'm thinking, God, you guys didn't really get any of this right. This looks... doesn't look right.
I know, but you know, I do like Zachary Levi.
I mean, too.
He's a very, very likable guy.
What's he been in? I can't... think of him.
Well, he's known for being in Chuck, in the show Chuck, that was on for years, and he's also in Shazam, and he was the voice in the Rapunzel
Twisted. He's the main guy in Shazam, isn't he?
What's that?
He's the main guy in Shazam.
Oh, yeah, he is the main star of Shazam, with some added padding. I don't think that's all him.
So, I'll watch it just because, you know, you can't not be intrigued by that story, especially being a St. Louisan.
Yeah.
But it looks like a Hallmark movie.
A Hallmark movie.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Without the Christmas theme.
Right. Well, it's coming out on Christmas Day.
Oh, there you go. It is a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, and that's what I have for Sue's News today.
Sue's News, well, it's Dave's News, brought to you by?
Brought to you by Dave.
Brought to you by Dave. Hey, coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, because there was a ruling today on the St. Louis County mask mandate. And Judge Roboto issued an order. We're going to talk to the guy who litigated this to find out exactly what happened and where do we go from here in St. Louis County. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Bringing country back.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hasn't been keeping up with the theater of St. Louis County when it comes to COVID. It's been a mess. And I'll tell you, the only clear, concise opinions and guidance that I think we've gotten has been from Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt. Hey, thanks for joining us this afternoon on 97.1.
Great to be with you.
Hey, let me just set the stage before we dive into what happened today, because I think some of these dates are rather important. Just a brief highlight. On July 26, St. Louis County, through Sam Page, issued a health order, directed everyone age 5 and older to wear masks in indoor places. Of course, the St. Louis County Council hadn't done anything with it, even though there was a Missouri law that specified that it couldn't be empowered or continued in the absence of approval by the county council. And then Attorney General Eric Schmidt, you then filed suit to block that. Tell us just briefly why you initially filed that lawsuit, and then we'll get into what happened today.
Well, I fundamentally don't believe in the forced masking of 1 million people. And this has turned into the biggest power grab we've seen in generations.
Yes.
I mean, what Sam Page is, and this is about power, it's about control. They never want to let it go. They're basing this on anything. The goalpost continues to change. We were told that if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. That all changed. Now you got Sam Page wanting to continue the power that he got about a year ago. He doesn't want to let it go. And so we stood up for the people and filed that lawsuit, and we won. And then they came back. I don't want to interrupt the timeline.
No, that's okay. Let me just kind of briefly then say the county council initially voted down the order when they did get around to voting on it. And then a few weeks later, the county council revisited the issue, and then they voted to support the order. And this was all thrown into the lap of Circuit Court Judge Roboto, who initially issued a temporary restraining order in favor of you, Attorney General Eric Schmidt, stating really in favor of the people of St. Louis County, stating that the government did not have the authority, particularly Sam Page did not have the authority to issue that particular mandate. So we've had this temporary restraining order in place preventing the enforcement of the order, even though the rest of this has been in legal limbo. Tell us what happened today in terms of the ruling from Judge Roboto.
Yeah, so we had that original victory, which was the temporary restraining order. And then we had the preliminary injunction, which was a few weeks ago, that kept that restraining order in place, meaning St. Louis County's never really had a mask mandate ever, even though Sam Page wanted it desperately and has tried all kinds of tricks of the trade to get there. St. Louis County, then after that vote they took a few weeks ago, went back to court to dissolve that injunction that we had gotten from the court, basically prohibiting the mask mandate from going into effect. And we were victorious. The judge said, look, you can't extend something that either never existed or expired. So the vote didn't mean what Sam Page wanted it to mean. And I think that the county executive, unfortunately, and a lot of bureaucrats in St. Louis County have tried to convey somehow to the people of St. Louis County that there's been a mask order or this is just a temporary halt. There's never been one.
Never.
And as far as I'm concerned, there's never going to be one. This is exactly the wrong approach. I mean, as cases were going down in St. Louis County, they were going up in St. Louis City that had a mask mandate. We've got a lawsuit against St. Louis City as well. It's just a little bit of a different track because of some of the council actions that have taken place. People have had enough of this. They're tired of it. These are decisions that people can make. We know a lot more about this virus than we did a year ago. It's a seasonal virus. It's not going away anytime soon. And that's just a reality we're going to have to live with. But the fear-mongering that's taken place for these local bureaucrats to grab power is unconscionable. It's also why we've got a lawsuit that we filed against Columbia Public School District, and we sought class certification last week to include every school district in the state of Missouri that has a masking requirement. We're suing them too. There's no science or data that backs up these actions. These emergency orders that these, you know, bureaucrats are using to gain and aggregate and maintain power. Everybody ought to be very concerned about this. So I'm not going to ever back down from fighting this fight. But we had another victory today as St. Louis County sought to dissolve it. And in fact, dismiss our lawsuit. The judge denied that. The other thing that's important here is we're able to move forward with discovery. And I'm telling you right now, St. Louis County is terrified of discovery, which is us being able to ask them questions. What'd you base this on? What's your science? What studies have you relied upon? What emails were sent? They've been trying to block us from getting that information because I think they know once that stuff's disclosed and people are aware of just how arbitrary all this is, they know they can't recover from that. They've lost the confidence of the people, and I'm going to continue to fight for them every step of the way because to me this is a much larger debate about freedom,
it is.
About individual choice. Absolutely.
It is. We're talking to Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, and if you look up one of the three definitions of tyranny, is the unauthorized or improper use of power. And hasn't that been on display? I mean, whenever I talk to friends and family about what's going on in St. Louis County with the mask mandates, which really aren't mask mandates at all, but really it's the unauthorized use of power by the county executive. And Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, the litigation that you've been filing both in St. Louis City and county and across the state has really been to prevent tyranny in terms of preventing the excess use of power by government officials.
Absolutely. And look, we celebrated Constitution Day, you know, last week.
Last Friday.
And, this was something that our founders were very well aware. This is the way of the world that always has been, where these petty tyrants, dictators, despots try to accumulate, aggregate, and exert power. A lot of times they'll use quote-unquote emergency orders or emergency rules to do it. And by the way, they never let that stuff go. And so for me, America's been the freest country in the history of the world. That is worth fighting for. To me, this is a much larger debate about who we are, who we've been, and what we're going to be. And I have no issues, and I am unapologetic to stand on that front line. But there's a lot of people with us on this because I've been at events in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've never seen anything like this. I went to Ray's Cafe in Kansas City, where Jackson County was trying to shut them down. They're opened up, by the way, again. But that's an ongoing court case. There were 400 people there. I was at the Capitol last week, hundreds of people there. I was in a living room last week. There were 100 moms there. I mean, people are tired of this stuff. There's a bubbling up. People are showing up at these council meetings. They're showing up at school board meetings. This is America, and people want their country back.
Yeah, I was outraged, and the number of examples are now borderline countless. But my favorite example is from Nevada, when during COVID, Nevada tried to and successfully closed churches under the auspices of saying we have to stop the spread of COVID. Oh, but massage parlors and casinos can stay open, but we're going to close churches. And
right.
To me, whether it's that or whether it's the eviction moratorium that was unfounded constitutionally, or a vaccine mandate that's also invalid constitutionally, or whether it's same page, we're seeing an attack on our freedoms coast to coast, aren't we?
Absolutely. And mark my words, a year from now, around now, we'll be hearing that in-person voting isn't safe and that we have to have mass mail-in balloting and we need political operatives to go out there and get these ballots because of this new variant that we're, you know, being exposed to. The left is just not going to let this go because they're getting things done that they could have never gotten done without this. And again, like I said, this is a tyrant mentality. And I think that people are waking up. This is a fight about freedom. And by the way, the facts and the science don't back this stuff up either. For kids, like, for example, if you're relatively healthy, you got about a one in a million shot of actually dying from COVID. Okay. Every death is a tragedy. There have been no children under the age of 10 who died from COVID. There have been 6 under the age of 18. But if you watch the nightly news, you would think that, I mean, the seasonal influenza is more deadly. Those are just the facts. It's not to say this isn't serious or we shouldn't take it seriously, mm-hmm. but the fear-mongering taking place right now, I've never seen anything like it, and which is why we're fighting on all fronts, and we're not going to back down on this thing because I think this is a much larger debate about individual liberty, about freedom, the separation of powers, preventing aggregation of power and control for the founders as it is now, is about protecting individual liberty. People can make these decisions. Parents and families can make the decision if they want to send their kid to school with masks. If you've been vaccinated and you want to walk around Forest Park with 6 masks on your face, I've said it before, go ahead and do it. This is America. But you shouldn't be having the government compel others to do that.
Exactly. And it was Rahm Emanuel, who was the advisor to President Clinton and former mayor of Chicago, who famously said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And we're seeing that on display here. Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, I know your time is limited. Last question, though. What's the end game for this litigation? We saw what Judge Roboto did today. You talked a little bit about the discovery that really scares St. Louis County and Sam Page's office to death because of the what could come out of this discovery. But what's the end game for this litigation?
To continue to prevent this, we've got another hearing about a month from now, and we're going to continue to fight back. We're going to get discovery in the meantime. We're just going to try to hold the line everywhere we can. And ultimately, I think the science and the facts will bear out that this stuff was, they're just making this stuff up as they go along. So we're going to fight the fight with the forced masking of our kids. We're going to fight the fight in St. Louis City. We're going to fight the fight in St. Louis County. We're going to fight the fight in Kansas City. We're going to fight the fight in Jackson County. I'm not going anywhere on this. And we're just going to try to win wherever we can. And again, fight this very important fight for freedom.
Excellent. Hey, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. And this, there is so much theater with this. And I'm the legal analyst for Camo X and also for KFTK. And so I have to study this stuff when it comes out in order to bring the information to you, to break it down, what it means and how it affects us. And as I've been studying these mask mandates and the actions of the county council, folks, it's maddening. I mean, you could put four lawyers in a room and get six different opinions. I mean, it's that complicated. And it shouldn't be. It doesn't have to be. I mean, if you look at what the county council effectively did when they initially voted down Sam Page's order, as the court ruled today, and I think ruled correctly so, you can't resurrect an order that's already been invalidated. And this is my language, not Judge Roboto's, but there are no zombie orders. They don't come back to life after they're dead. Once they're dead, and you can't resurrect them. But at this point, rather at the point when the county council voted to support the order from Sam Page, even though it had already been invalidated, at that point, Rita Days Heard said that this was a ceremonial vote. And if you look at the actual wording of what Sam Page issued, there was never any mandate to it to begin with. But what I have a problem with is, you know, whether you want to issue a mask mandate or not, we can argue whether it's valid or not valid, whether it's necessary or not necessary. But if you exercise a power that violates state law, which Sam Page did, and then publicly you mischaracterize what that order actually does, which was nothing, and yet assert that it was a mask mandate, which it wasn't, at that point you have government officials exercising power they don't have and telling you to do things that the order didn't tell you to do in the first place. To me, that is the definition of irresponsible government. I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, or an independent, or a socialist. If your government officials are telling you things that aren't true and exercising power they don't have, that is the quintessential definition of tyranny. And I know if you use the word tyranny with a mask mandate, people get all upset. But folks, that's what it really comes down to. And that's why these types of power grabs, whether it's with the federal government, state government, or local government, must be challenged. Hey, Brad Young sitting in this afternoon. I'll tell you somebody I'm not going to challenge. That's Frank Cusumano because he knows sports. He's coming up right after this on the Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon. And we're going to welcome our good friend. You know him. You've known him forever. KSDK Sports Director Frank Cusumano. Hey, Frank, good afternoon, my friend.
Good to be with you, Brad. Hope you're well.
I am well. And I'll tell you who else is well, at least if you look at the performance this weekend, the Cardinals. I mean, could you have scripted a better outcome for this weekend's games against San Diego? Could you have scripted it any better yourself?
No, couldn't have scripted it, couldn't have predicted it, and still it's hard to believe it. It's absolutely insane. You know, when you got three phases of the game, like just clicking at the absolute, you know, most important part of the season, you win eight straight when you have to win eight straight. Your starting pitching, which has been very questionable all season long, is at their best. The defense, you open up games with heart-stopping plays by Dylan Carlson. And then you had this great power display on Saturday night by Tyler O'Neill to win it. It's just insane. It really is.
Well, I've heard folks talking about whether the Cardinals are peaking too soon. At least from my perspective, that's always better than the alternative, not peaking at all.
Exactly. And you can start to really, you know, get some momentum here and get a little space, which they have. You know, when the Cardinals woke up this morning, according to the analytics and the computers, they had a 72% chance of making the postseason. You know, three games in terms of a lead with just 2 weeks to play is pretty sizable. I mean, I'm not saying you just play 500 ball, which I don't think they will. I think they'll play better than that. But you've earned this lead, and it's going to loom large here down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. Now, we did hear some news today about Daniel Ponce de Leon. What happened today?
Well, they DFA'd him, so that means he's done as a Cardinal. And, you know, God bless Daniel Ponce de Leon, who I always really liked. He's a strong Christian man, wrote a book about his comeback from being hit with a baseball. But when you had that little scuffle in the dugout with Yadier, in addition to not getting people out on a regular basis, that's a bad mix. It was tough for him to overcome, and he did not.
Well, and I guess that was the point I was trying to make here, was that this wasn't just because he got into a squabble with Yachty. I mean, it was coupled with performance as well, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Believe me, if Daniel Ponce de Leon had a 2.5 ERA and was lights out of the bullpen, he and Yachty could have come to blows and they'd find a way to keep him on the roster. But if you can't pitch and you're feuding with the Hall of Fame catcher, it's a tough mix.
It's time to go. Hey, I'll tell you who it's time for them to come back is Jack Flaherty and Dakota Hudson. What are their, as far as their pitching, when are they going to be coming back, and how are they doing right now in terms of getting ready to come back?
Well, here's the latest, is Dakota Hudson is going to do one more start in the minor leagues, and then he'll be here. Jack Flaherty is doing a bullpen tomorrow, and if it goes well, there's a reasonable chance he could pitch in that doubleheader on Friday in Chicago. And I think if both results are encouraging, you know, the start in the minor leagues and the bullpen session tomorrow, I think we're going to see them both, like, in the bullpen here when the postseason comes. And you talk about some weapons. Oh, my goodness, to have those two live arms. I don't think either of them will start in the postseason. But, boy, if you could get six out of your starter mm-hmm. and then go to one of those guys in the seventh, that would be scary.
Well, one of the things that I'm wondering whether it's going to be scary or not is Milwaukee. I mean, we're getting ready to start a series with Colton Wong and the Milwaukee Brewers. How do you see this series in terms of matchups and outcomes?
Well, what scares me about the Brewers is their starting staff. Their big four are out of sight, and I think it's the best starting staff from top to bottom in the league. This Cardinal team has been scoring at an alarming pace. You got a good feel about almost every hitter that's starting. But, boy, it's one thing to do it against the Padres and that hapless staff. It's another thing to do it against the Brewers. Now, are the Brewers playing for much? No. But you know they'd like to spoil the Cardinal season and sweep them this week.
Well, and sorry to backpedal just a moment here, but I was watching that Dylan Carlson catch over the weekend. Is that going to make the highlight reel, at least in the coming days? Is that going to be the focus of the highlight reel?
Well, it's just one of many great plays, but that's as good as you can get. And here's the thing, Brad, is that if you look at every position player, every one of them is a plus fielder. I mean, Bader has a chance to win a gold glove. Tyler O'Neill has already won a gold glove. Carlson is going to win one day. Goldschmidt has to win one. Arenado's got a shelf full of them. Tommy Edman has been solid. Yachty's got eight or nine of them. And then at shortstop, Sosa has played like a gold glove shortstop in a short period of time that he's gotten the chance.
Well, I think isn't John Lester going to be pitching this evening?
Tonight is going to be Jake Woodford.
I'm sorry.
Who's been solid. He's He's not an innings eater, but if you can get five innings and one run out of Woodford, I'll take it right away.
And so what do you expect in terms of – because I know John Lester, I guess I was reading that he was going to be pitching this weekend, but Lester really took it on the chin when he first came to the Cardinals here not too long ago. But he's seen a great deal of improvement since his initial shaky outing.
Well, it's a great point, Brad. I think that everybody was killing John Mozeliak for the Hap and the Lester moves. Okay, because one was 37, one was 38, one had the ERA in the fives, one had the ERA in the sixes. But you got to remember what the alternative was. What they were trotting out there was not getting it done. It was really bad. And although it took a little bit of time for Lester and Hap to find their mojo, these are exquisite moves by John Mozeliak. And let's give Yadier Molina, Mike Maddux, and Adam Wainwright some credit, because they've all played a role in the renaissance of both these guys getting it back. They brought up points, throw this more, throw this less. It's been a whole team concept with these two pitchers.
Well, you have set the table for us this weekend, Frank Cusumano. Appreciate you joining us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, Brad, have a good one. Thank you, sir.
Great to talk to you. Hey, well, let's do something fun, Dave. This is not something we get to do all the time. How about this? Caller number two at 314-241-9797 wins a pair of tickets to the Cardinals-Cubs game. The Cardinals-Cubs game on Sunday, October 3rd. Now, the Cardinals are going to honor the career of legendary Mike Shannon that day. And the first 20,000 fans, 16 and older, will get to take home a unique T-shirt celebrating Mike Shannon's 50 years in the broadcast booth. So that's caller number two at 314-241-9797. And you could win Cubs and Cardinals tickets. Who else is giving away those right now? Nobody, but except right here on 97.1 FM Talk. You know, one of the things I wanted to just to wrap up here this hour is that, and Frank mentioned it, moves by John Mozeliak. One of the moves that I was impressed with, I watched all the games this weekend, one of the moves that I was impressed with was the move of fans back to the stadium. Because the Cardinals have been legendary about packing the stadium over the years, averaging usually about 3.5 million, which in our region is just phenomenal for putting rear ends in the seats at Busch Stadium. But this year, you know, earlier in the year, there were some question marks about the Cardinals, and those question marks, I think, were punctuated by the lack of fans in the stands. And yet, over the weekend, it was great to see a stadium full of screaming Cardinals fans welcoming baseball and hopefully playoffs back to St. Louis. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.